welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good.
You chose a poem this week I find particularly interesting. It's from JAMA Internal Medicine. The background for this is that according to probability theory and sort of Bayesian thinking, the interpretation of new clinical information depends on your prior probability of disease in that particular patient. You know, we tend to put people into three groups when we think about testing, right? There's the treat, don't test. There's the test group, and there's the no test, don't treat, because it really, the probability is so low. Much of our probability comes from the patient's history and our observations, and perhaps from our physical exam. And some comes from our understanding of the actual person, their demographics, their age, their risk factors, etc. The poem that you found that comes from JAMA Internal Medicine attempts to answer the question, how accurate are clinicians' estimates of illness given common scenarios, and how do they adjust these estimates of likelihood of illness based on positive or negative results? So it's a sort of a thought study, but it's a very important concept. Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, this is a bit different from the studies we normally talk about, but I thought it was really interesting and important to kind of help guide us in a larger sense. So they had about 700 outpatient clinicians, and about three quarters agreed to complete the task. And they were asked to estimate the pretest probability before getting a test result, and then to estimate the post-test probability after getting either a positive or negative test result for the condition. They then compared those estimates with what they felt were true estimates based on the literature. And for low likelihood diseases, clinician estimates were low, but still much higher than calculated. For breast cancer, in a 45-year-old woman without symptoms, the clinicians estimated 5%. The actual number is 0.2 to 0.3%. And UTI in a 65-year-old man seen for osteoarthritis, but who happens to mention he has foul-smelling urine, but no dysuria, no pain or difficulty with urination. They estimated 20% risk of UTI. The actual number is closer to 1%. The clinician estimates with higher probability scenarios were also too high. So a 43-year-old premenopausal woman with atypical chest pain, but a normal EKG, they thought 10% risk of cardiac ischemia. It's actually between 1 and 4%. Healthy 35-year-old woman who smokes tobacco with 5 days of fatigue, productive cough, worsening shortness of breath, mild temperature elevation, decreased breath sounds in the lower right field. They estimated 80% chance of pneumonia. It's actually closer to 30, 35%. So clinicians seem to place too much faith in positive test results. They overestimated the likelihood of breast cancer after a positive mammogram. They guessed 50%. The actual number is closer to 7 or 8%. Infection following a positive urine culture, they said 80% versus actually closer to 5 or 6% in that setting for that patient. Coronary disease after a positive stress test, they estimated 70%. It's actually closer to 10 in that 43-year-old premenopausal woman. And pneumonia after that, if that patient had a positive chest x-ray, they were 95% sure. It's actually closer to 55%. So negative results were often ignored. Even after a negative mammogram, breast cancer was estimated to be present in 5%. UTI after a negative culture, still 5% when it's actually less than 0.1%. And I could go on, but basically there's a lot of detail in this study, but you know, basically the bottom line is clinicians in this survey consistently overestimated the likelihood of a range of diseases when given signs and symptoms. So they put too much value in that clinical picture. They also overestimated the likelihood that a positive test result reflected the disease, and they minimized the impact of negative test results. They were still kind of fixed on that diagnosis. So I think these reflect our inability to accurately estimate risk, first of all, and also a tendency to cling to our original diagnostic hypothesis and not reconsider other alternative diagnoses when the data doesn't support it. And I think there's also a desire to find problems that we can do something about. We can treat pneumonia. We can treat cardiac ischemia. We can treat UTI. And so I think that may be part of the bias. You know, when in doubt, do something. We all have that interventional bias. And also this, as Alan Shaughnessy, who wrote the poem, says, blame your fourth grade math teacher or whoever taught you biostats in medical school.
Yeah, it's a great study. I mean, it really gives us lots of food for thought. I wonder if we were charged with making a difference in practice, how we would intervene here. Is this something that starts in medical school? Is it something that we learn in clinical practice? And it's just perhaps a cynic would say that, you know, we're erring on the side of looking for more disease, and that ends up benefiting patients. And, you know, there's a whole lot of studies to show that overdiagnosis doesn't help patients. It actually can hurt patients. I'm wondering how we would intervene to change this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we do have tools. There are clinical prediction rules that can help you make better estimates of the likelihood of disease. There are, for example, in Essential Evidence Plus, we have about 5,000 calculators, Bayesian calculators, where you can plug in your estimate of the pretest probability and then a positive or negative test, and it'll tell you the post-test probability. So I think those can be used as teaching scenarios in medical school and residency. And I think there's also a tendency to anchor at 0 and 100%, that a negative test is 0 and a positive test is 100. And there's also this anchoring to our original diagnosis. And maybe the first step is simply recognizing that we have these cognitive biases so that we can maybe pause and reflect and reconsider and think about alternative diagnosis.
You know, our medical students and our residents work hard to get into medical school, and that many of them have taken advanced math classes, and almost everyone has taken some advanced science classes. So that they are pretty facile at basic mathematics, but you wouldn't know that from teaching them. They seem to have a phobia of not calculating things, because mostly the computers can do that for us now, smartphones, et cetera. But even embracing some of the numerology and some of the statistics, it just, a generation of doctors seem to be very phobic of that. And if the faculty are phobic of that, it doesn't creep in, even if there are people like you and I teaching this on a regular basis, unless it's integrated into regular practice, it seems it's not going to go very far, this Bayesian thinking and prior probability, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Slauson has talked a lot about this, and I think correctly that medical education, particularly in the first 2 years, is so focused on pathophysiologic reasoning and reasoning from, quote, first principles and what should work rather than what does work. And there's also, you know, we teach a little bit of biostatistics, but I think we need to put a lot more emphasis on that. I think biostatistics, you know, of course, should be required before you even get into medical school. You know, we talk about biochemistry being required and cell physiology, but biostatistics is really important to understand that.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Sounds good.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.